everybody. This is Robert Forto hosting live from Willow, Alaska. And on the line is the host for the Husky Live, Steve Violette, calling in from Northeast Canada out in the woods and sled dog country. Steve, how is it going?
Not too bad, Robert. How's it going with you?
We are well up here. It's getting closer and closer to fall training, and we are looking to get out there and work with those dogs.
It's the same here. September's coming around the corner. And I'm getting itchy. Last week I got blessed with a couple of really cool mornings, and I just couldn't pass up the opportunity to harness up a couple of dogs and just take off on the bike just to get that tease going. And I'm telling you, I shouldn't have done it because now I'm just itching to get going again.
I hear you there. So when is the first time that you typically have snow up there where you can get on sleds where you're at?
Well, the snow here, you know, like we've talked about, it's been on and off, but usually, like last year, I was lucky. I was exceptionally lucky. I actually met Linda on that weekend. It was in the first weekend of November, and I was out in Essex County. There was no snow at all. It was a dry land race out there. The weather was fantastic. I get back home on an 11-hour drive. I get here, and there was 2 inches of snow on the ground. The very next morning, first week of November, I was out with the sled.
So what do you typically, Stephen, what do you typically use as a gauge to get out the sleds? Here where we're at, we've been on a lot of tundra grass, a lot of swampy type areas, so everything has to freeze up real hard before we go out. We don't have the luxury unless we drive somewhere to go right on from our backyard until we really get a good freeze, which is typically around Halloween here in the States. What about you? Do you go with just a few inches on the ground, or do you have enough just to set a hook, or what are you looking for?
You know, I you could call me a little bit crazy. I don't wait for the chance to be able to hook down on anything. The minute my skis can touch some snow, I'm gone. I've wrecked some sleds over rocks and boulders that are sticking out of the snow as I'm going. I see the snow. I guess I'm like a cocaine addict. That's it. If there's an inch of snow on the ground, the sled's out and I'm gone. I put the wheels away, and if it sticks, it sticks, and we're staying on it.
Very cool. So today, Steve, we have somebody calling in. I know it's a good friend of yours. I'm going to let you introduce them. They're calling in from Maryland, not to be thought of necessarily as sled dog country. You know, I grew up, went to high school in Northern Virginia, so I'm definitely aware of the weather out there in Maryland. So when I think of mushing, boy, I sure don't think of Maryland. What's happening over that neck of the woods, Steve?
Same here. When I think of dog sledding, if I never would have had the opportunity to meet Linda, dog sledding was the last place I would have imagined this was going on, is out in Maryland. But this woman and her husband, I'm going to introduce them now, Linda and Mike Hertering. My God, they have a fantastic story. They have a fantastic life. They led a fantastic life up until they were, I'll use the term, reborn into mushing life. And I'm lucky enough to have them on the show. I met Linda last year at Loquacious' premier dog sledding racing career. And she's a fantastic lady, and I can just imagine how much of a fantastic husband she's got to be able to put up with, I mean, to be able to live with her. So without further ado, here's some good friends that I have the opportunity to call friends. That's Linda Hertering and Mike. Guys, how you doing?
Hi there. Hi, Mike and I are both here online, and we're so happy to be here, and that is quite an introduction. Thank you. I must say that was not only your daughter's first race, but mine as well. And several people there did their first race. Yeah.
Right. I remember that because that was one big thing I was so surprised of. Not only was it your first race, if memory serves, you entered almost every event there. You were canny crossing. You were running with the rigs, with the bike, everything.
Yes, that's true. I entered the I brought four dogs, and I entered the six dog class because they said, you know, you can do it, and we can use more people, and I knew my dogs could do it. And so I was there to have all the fun I could, and I did Candy Cross and the four dog race and the six dog race, never expecting to win. I just wanted to really go and be around mushers and talk dogs and talk mushing, because I don't do it very often. I'm always talking to people about mushing, and I thought it would be fun, and I wasn't disappointed.
Yeah, I understand you completely. The thing that people tend to not realize, it may be one of the difference between the racing world and the touring world, is when you go out to races, you do get to spend most of your time with people that do exactly what you do, that dog sled. But when you're in the touring business, it's you and a bunch of people that don't know. That's it. There's no in-between. So you don't get to talk with people that live the same life you do. You get to educate people all the time. But to share stories and to talk shop, it's very rare.
You're so right. And we did this exactly that, as you do, for so many years before Facebook. Now, Facebook has been a little helpful because you can, you know, connect with other mushers. But where we live, you're not seeing them. As I said, you're talking mushing all the time, but always at people. And they're soaking it up. And, you know, I love doing it, and I love educating. But it's also nice to have peers and colleagues, as they would say in the business world.
I completely agree with you. Now, I'd like you to, I've read your story, I've heard you talking that directly person to person when we met over in Essex County last year, but there's a ton of folk here that don't know what we're talking about. They just hear these people talking to each other. Mm-hmm. So I'd like you to give me a little bit of information about you and Mike, how you guys got started, what you used to do before that, and how you got started in dog sled.
Sure. I love to tell the tale, which I do often. I'm sure you get that question in your tours.
Yeah.
We run a dog sled touring business, and yes, here in Maryland. But Western Maryland is very, very different from the Maryland around Washington, D.C. and Northern Virginia.
Okay.
It has quite the microclimate of snow and cold and cooler summers, much cooler summers. And if anybody doesn't know where Maryland is, it's right by D.C., and most people know where D.C. is. But it has a panhandle. And we're 3 hours into the mountains, and we get lake effect snow from the Great Lakes, over 120 inches a year, believe it or not.
Wow.
And I live in Maryland, and I don't have an air conditioner, and I've never seen a mosquito here. So I could go on and on about that. But so it's an ideal location. Plus, it's a resort area. We have ski because of the weather. We have a beautiful mountain lake and all kinds of recreational opportunities and a ski resort. We decided to do dog sled tours here, and I'll tell you what we did before in a minute, but I'll tell you what we do now. The name is Husky Power Dog Sledding, which was a hard thing to do, is name your business. We started 10 years ago, and we wanted to be on the educational side of the house and not just do, you know, rides after rides without talking. And so the location's ideal for that, too, because there's so little dog sledding here. It's so far south that a lot of people are interested in the educational part. So I developed the whole sort of substructure. We decided to every single tour would have a two-hour educational element, whether they wanted it or not. And some people don't. And, you know, we'd send them elsewhere. They would learn about just a little bit of history. We talk about racing. I developed sort of a entertaining and educational presentation about what I think is the most important part of dog sledding and the most dangerous part and the most fun part. And so we do that. We see all the equipment. We go into the dog yard and meet every single dog and talk about breeds and about our dogs. And then they choose a time on the trail, you know, depending on what package they choose, either a short time or a learn to mush. They could mush the team their first time. And this, to sum up, this educational element is what we do all summer when it's too hot to run the dogs. And being a resort area, we get a lot of vacationers. They come here. They never get time on the sleds, wheeled sleds or runnered sleds. They get this two-hour presentation, which is really fun for the dogs and fun for us. So we continue to be open all year long here in Maryland. I tried
but
to sum it up quickly. It's hard.
But you do some dry land mushing, though. You do quite a bit of it because I've seen your rigs.
Absolutely. We do. And that's the tours, which we do, which when it's cold enough, we start. Oh, it used to be, you know, early September. Now it's late September, and we run through the end of April, sometimes early May, and start in the morning when it's cooler. We run wheels, and we have Fritz Dyke Tory, a two-seater fantastic wheeled, we call it a wheeled sled, but he calls it his Tory. And so we could take two passengers on that. Of course, we train with an ATV. We also have a single seat. We run all through the beautiful fall colors in the Allegheny Mountains. It's gorgeous until snow comes. Till enough. You were talking about that earlier. Till we think there's enough snow, and we often use the wheels in the snow because we use the same trail so much, the snow becomes compromised, and we do want to hook down and be able to. So we'll choose either the runnered sled or the wheeled sled, depending on the trail conditions.
Okay. Now, I've seen, just correct me if I'm wrong, but do your clients, when you do dry land dog sledding, do your clients get to guide the dry land machine, I'll call it, themselves, or is it just always you and Mike?
Well, if they choose that, we call it a learn to mush, which is a longer time on the trail. If they choose that tour, they get a longer time, and they do drive the team the first time, and it's wonderful for them because. And a lot of times I tell people, they're like, oh, I want snow. It's pretty and traditional. However, the Fritz Dyke wheeled sled weighs 250 pounds. So if you're bringing two guests and a musher, you know, three adults, they could be pulling 800 pounds, 1,000 pounds. So we need a lot of dogs. So we'll bring a 12 to 14 dog team, and it's four-wheeled. It's a four-wheeled sled, and which means it's very stable. And you can stop them with the fantastic hydraulic brakes on it, four disc brakes. They are motorcycle brakes, Ducati motorcycle brakes. And so we feel very safe, and so does a tour guest, because it's sort of like steering a bicycle, and they get to drive 14 dogs for the very first time. And to me, it's incredible. I'm smiling right now because it's, you know, quite an experience to see such a long team. We're confident,
Where you say it's safe. See, me being in the same business you are, I got to applaud you there, because just hearing you tell me that you will hook up 14 dogs to four wheels and let a client drive that, it's scaring the jeez out of me right
now. They're not alone. They're not alone. We're sitting in the sled, you know, you understand.
I don't care. That scared me even more.
They get instruction, and we just don't say go. I mean, they ride first, and you know, and they learn. They learn a lot first, and then they do. They do. They have it. My husband's raising his hand. Yes.
Actually, Steve, I'll just chime in a little bit to explain a little bit more in detail. When we take off with the 14 dogs, the customers are, you know, in the seats, and either Linda or I are mushing. And we give them a real quick orientation within the first mile. And at the end of the first mile, I put one of the clients on the back, and I get in the seat right in front of them. And I'm kind of sitting on the railing so that if they do fall off, I can grab the brakes right away. but I have to tell you that in 10 years of doing this, we've only had one client ever fall off the back. and she just happened to be the Washington Post reporter that was doing an article on
it. Oh,
no!
That must
have
made a great story.
That is hilarious. It was a travel section feature article. And they do jerk, of course, when we talk about that. You know, we talk about how they jerk and stuff.
But it's actually incredible to see the look on their faces after we come back and they've driven a 14-dog team. And when they learn that their leaders are 53 feet in front of them and they're just responding to their voice commands, it's pretty impressive to see the happiness when we get back.
I've never actually let anybody out here take out a 14-dog team ever. The closest I've ever been to is myself. Last year, I had a teenager with a mental condition whose thrill of a lifetime was to be on a dog sled, and he couldn't. His parents had been looking for years to put him into a sled, but no dog sledding company wanted to take the chance because insurances wise, we weren't covered. If something happened because of his deficiency, we would be the ones that were running the risk of being sued personally.
Well, actually,
to
reiterate to that, we actually try to groom the trails as much as possible so that we can use the wheels vice the sled because, number one, we would never let customers drive a sled with 14 dogs, but... the other thing is, as you know, driving the wheeled rig is, like I said, we can teach them in 5 minutes how to do that, but to drive a sled, you know, I tell them, well, you're going to need to come back about every day for 3 years, and you might be competent enough to get out there, because our trails are through the woods and up and down mountains.
Yeah, it's the same here. It's the same with me. Our trails here is nothing but mountains and woods, so... You get those little nasty curves that maybe on the four-wheeler is decently handled, but on the sled is a whole different ballgame.
And let me talk to that. We do have a lot of turns, and we run on our 6 acres, and we run from home, which is purposely done so everyone that comes can see how the dogs live. They see the whole dog yard while we have the education. They watch the dogs interact while we're talking, and we have them close enough to play with each other and that sort of thing. But when we leave from home, they see how the whole dog yard works, and we do group tours. We stay close. We have often done Girl Scouts and family groups and up to 24 riders where everyone watches two people ride at a time, and we come and go. But even in our back 6 acres, it's full of turns and turns. So not only is it more difficult for us, it's more thrilling for the guests because they see all these turns. And we don't have any really long stretches like out in the wilderness. We're turning within every 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Within every 4 minutes. So the runner sled is definitely more difficult. And the four-wheeled sled, as you can imagine, turns pretty easy. It has shocks and stability. And I often tell tour guests, you know, it costs more than my car, and it doesn't have an engine.
Yeah.
It's true. It has all the dogs on the engine. It's stable and safe. However, we are, on the side of safety. We've never had anyone hurt ever in 10 years and thousands of guests every year that come to my home. I mean, I live here. It's amazing to me. In the summer, we get tour buses, motor coaches, and sometimes I look out my window as I walk out, and I say, I can't believe I have a tour bus in my driveway on my house. They see your house and how you live, and we're proud of it. So and we do shorten that tour for an hour because they're seniors, and but they see all the equipment, and they all remember Sergeant Preston. But back to the subject. So when we're out on all the tours, we also chase usually with an ATV, and so we have a chase vehicle out there, which which it's either Mike or I, we try to do the mushing, although we've had handlers. We have a handler live with us every year that sometimes is mushing. But we wanted to stay small enough to enjoy this, you know, on our own. So, and be out there. And I tell guests, it's, you know, I think it's as much fun watching the dogs coming towards you. So often we'll bring other guests with us on an ATV and repeatedly pass the dog team and stop and watch them pass us where we can see all the faces. And then we'll switch riders and they get to do that too. And because we do this, we're out there, I'm like, there's opportunity for photos there. So it's a great opportunity. So I take, or Mike takes, whichever one is mushing, probably hundreds of photos from all angles as the team's passing. And we give this to them on a disc. Marketing tool, marketing major here. They take home a disc free of probably, you know, 200 to 400 pictures. And they might find one with, you know, all 14 dogs and two people and mushers, you know, three people's eyes open. And they'll show it to their friends and that sort of thing. So
and you also have that on your webpage where people can actually pick their favorite picture and have it turned into a painting or like a nice framed work that you'll actually do for them.
Yes, that's true. There's on our website, which is huskypowerdogsledding.com, there's a page of artist services. And the name of the business is Mountain Maryland Kennels, because I thought that I would, when I started this, that I would do some other things in the summertime, you know, maybe dog training or grooming. No way. I'm too busy with tours. But I am able to do some of the artwork that I like to on the side, which is dog portraits mainly, is what but any animal. Folks can send me a picture of their pet. I originally thought I would, write off some camera equipment, but I was surprised how it took off. And I show in our local gallery in our county of Garrett County, Maryland, and I show in our nearby Allegheny County. I've had solo shows and been juried into some competitions, and I was surprised, that sled dog photographs of my sled dogs. I'm always surprised when they call me up and they say, your piece sold. Could you bring down another one to replace it? I'm like, what? My picture of my dog is hanging in someone else's home? Don't they have their own dog? So, yes, thank you for mentioning that.
There's something about huskies that just attract people to them naturally. You go into any souvenir shop and any business that offers dog sledding, any hotel, and it's nothing but husky this and husky that. Husky hats, husky mitts, husky everything, and they sell like hotcakes all the time. I've seen them everywhere, and there's just something about the huskies. They just attract people. We've talked about it a couple of times on the shows here, and there's just something about the husky, something about their face. Maybe they just bring you back to a more natural, peaceful state. I don't know. Maybe they remind you more about nature. I don't know what it is, but there's just something about a husky that when somebody looks at a picture, somebody looks at a postcard and it has a husky on it, it's like, it's the thing.
Well,
you know?
Steve, I just might add to that and say that our northern high school here's call sign is the Huskies, and one of our dogs' pictures is in the entrance to the high school, a big photograph of Czar hanging there.
Nice. See, that's what I mean. It's just something about it. It goes back to the wolf, the husky. I don't know. I know they're not related, but it's still anyway. But
gee, I thought it was just me. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Now, if memory serves, Linda, when we were at the race, you told me that when you and Mike got started in this, you guys actually went out to learn this, how to operate a tour business first.
Not exactly. We went on a tour. We started, like a lot of people do, coming to one of our businesses and going for a ride and learning. And actually, we went to Canada. We were still both working full-time and went on a vacation to Algonquin Provincial Park and did a five-day, for the very first time we ever mushed. We took our own team into the park and, you know, stayed at a cabin. So that was, you know, real very hands-on, of course, and not very, you know, we got your education, like, get on the sled immediately. And so then you fall in love with it. And wherever we were, we're still working, and I haven't really given our background, so I will right now. Mike is a retired Marine officer. He's a 32 years. He retired as a full colonel of Marines. I shouldn't say
full
colonel of Marines.
Now taking command.
Pardon
from
me?
His wife.
Full I
colonel
didn't hear you.
Who's now, that a full colonel who's now taking commands from his wife.
You're exactly right, because the wife is a general.
Actually, Steve, actually, Steve, I'm the CEO of Husky Power Dog Sledding, the chief excrement officer.
I tell our tour guests that. I made that up when they're watching. Mike's always out scooping, and we're watching the dogs, and I tell them that's the CEO. he was, and so we traveled. We were stationed all around the world, and I worked at different positions wherever we were, what I could do, and we would go for dog sledding tours. And Mike was stationed in Alaska at one point, and we would travel space aid free to Alaska. And so we continued to do that because of that same draw you said to Huskies, and mushing was exciting. And when he retired in 2002, we spent 2 years in a little RV traveling in all of North America, up to Alaska and down to Key West and Nova Scotia. And that's when we learned you could actually be handlers. So
yeah.
Here's a retired full colonel, and we're in our 40s and 50s, and we went and worked for a couple of two different dog sledding operations to learn, and we scooped, and you know, for almost free, we did everything handlers do in the yard and built to learn. And we were in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and we were in Colorado, and that's when. And after that was done, I grew up in Maryland, and I would vacation and went to school near this resort area. I said to myself, you know, what are we going to do? 2 years. We wanted to do something that we were passionate about, and we're just waiting for it to hit us. It's very unique. We're unencumbered, you know, no kids are at home, and we had sold our condo in D.C. We had nothing but our RV, and that's how we could do the handler time. And so that's when we had the idea. After that, that's what we love. We love mushing and dog sledding, and home back in Maryland is home, but it has the weather, it has the interest in the educational element because it's so far south, and I thought I would, you know, retire back up north, but this really made sense. It had all these close to the grandkids, so we came here and started this from scratch in this area. Sometimes, you know, you take over a business, or it was never here before.
Okay.
So it got press. You know, it got a lot of press being so unique
first.
Far south, and that was great.
It is great because you're not only the first; you are very different, as far as I'm concerned. Everything you offer, I mean, I've prided myself in educating many, and even introducing many in the arts of skijoring. Not cross-country skiing, but bike drawing, some that do rural dog sledding with their dogs. They own a husky or two. They come here to train and learn and so forth. And I'll call it the typical touring company stuff. You know, I get thousands of people every year that come here to learn a whole pile of different things. But to offer the stuff that you offer, like this two-hour tour that a bus can pull up and go through without even putting their feet on the runners. That's something that you just rarely see. You know, like I'll have a tour. They come in for an hour. We talk dogs. We talk shop. We talk equipment. then we hook up and we go. I've never even phantomed the idea of simply having this is how sled dogs live in educational tour. You know, so you guys offer a lot more than just dog sledding.
I might add to that, Steve, that we had never seen an educational presentation, and Linda pretty much put what we do together by some trial and error, and it was like 4 or 5 years after we had operating the business, and we had a handler here during the springtime, so we decided to go visit our friends up in Alaska, and we finally went to Mitch Seavey's place and Martin Boozer's place and saw a real at Jeff King's place and saw a real presentation, and we looked at each other and said, well, I guess we're doing okay. We say pretty much what they say.
But they talk, those that educate, you know, give their tours or their kennels at our Iditarod racers talk a lot about the Iditarod. And I talk a lot less about it because I don't do it. I talk about mushing in general. Of course, I talk about it and about racing. And Jen, that's what people learn. They learn a lot of things, but the two basic things, and it might be the same with you, they learn, they had no idea sprint racing or mid-distance racing exists, at least in this neck of the woods. Most of them never knew about dry land mushing or wheel mushing. They get an education about, you know, there's no school sport, no national league. There's movies and books. And movies and books, we love movies and books. They're, like, really pretty. But they're always on snow. So they're surprised to learn that there's wheeled mushing and there's races on wheels. And there's actually sprint races. There's one in Maryland that Pennsylvania Sled Dog Club puts on one. All of these visitors, you know, didn't know that. It doesn't get press. Sprint racing doesn't get much press anywhere, not even in the hometown. So they're surprised. You know, we send a lot of people to go watch races that are in their backyard that they didn't know about, all over northern Pennsylvania and New Jersey. There's not many, and most of them are dry land races, but, you know, they learn about that in their own backyard, and they're surprised.
Now, before I go on,
Steve, if I could ask a question to Linda and Mike, please.
Sure, go for it.
Linda, can you guys tell us a little bit about your dogs? How many do you have? What do you have?
That's exactly where I was going.
Okay.
Great minds think alike. I'm sitting here looking at them right now. We're sitting on our deck overlooking a quiet dog yard, which we built where we could see from, you know, every room of the house. And so they're, you know, they can't get away with anything. It's like they hear a voice from a window, you know, stop the digging. And it's a very large for us. It can hold 30 dogs, and we've had up to 30 dogs over the years. We're downsizing now to a very small number, I think, of 13, enough for us to continue our tour business. But they're mostly Siberians. We have a couple Alaskans, three Alaskans, and mostly Siberians from all different lines. We started out with this business really not – we wanted to get going, and there was a kennel closing, and so we got, you know, 9 dogs of theirs, and then we realized we really want dog sledding lineage. So we started buying dogs with dog sledding lineage instead of just huskies from anywhere. And, you know, there's a learning curve. Some of us know ahead of time, you know, we learn the hard way. It's great, you know, to run with your house dogs, but the business needed more of the dog sledding lineage. So we, and I wanted to have another litter. We had one small litter, and I said, you know, if I'm going to have another one, I want good lineage. So Karen Ramstead sold us one of her dogs to breed, which is very rare, Rory, and we have some wonderful puppies from two of her dogs, Slider and Rory, And that time Mike mentioned that we visited Alaska, we took home a dog from Lance Mackey, you know, and we he goes, you know, what do you want one of my dogs for? You're not going to run long-distance races down there. And he said to us, he goes, just so you could tell people you have a Lance Mackey dog? This is 5 years ago. And I said, yes. That's exactly right. And that's what we do. You know, this dead Lance Mackey dog. Very, very good dog. Very happy here. And, you know, he's one of the Alaskans. And so we're not trying to, you know, to develop any racing line or anything. We're just working with our good working dogs. And we have only 13 because we are downsizing. We are downsizing because both Mike and I are injured, and we would love someone to take over this business. I've had it on Sled Dog Central for, oh, a couple years, and then I stopped saying, you know, we put all the systems in place and all the trails, and it's just turnkey. I don't want it to die, but Mike has a back injury, and I have a shoulder injury, and we're 10 years, and we are already retired, and we want to retire. And I would give this business to some musher. There's room for their dogs that just want to keep it alive. And they don't have to keep it alive. I mean, it has an incredible intangible value. We've gotten publicity like you wouldn't believe. Southern Living Magazine, Blue Ridge Country Magazine, Four Color Magazines, several major newspaper articles, great videos on our YouTube channel that Maryland Public Television did an Outdoors Maryland segment. Being a unique business, you know, we got a lot of publicity. So that means we'd never paid to advertise, and we're totally booked all winter long,
nice.
Every year. And, well, of course, we don't do that much. You know, we do one tour a day and not every day. And and less and less as the years go by. Someone could do more and more. We turn away, what, Mike, 3 times more business than
we
do?
Easy.
You know, so we turn away. So there's a lot of potential. And I can't seem to find anybody. And I haven't done, like, you know, a big advertising blast because mushers are, you know, it's not something you put in your local paper, you know.
No. And I'm even going to be bold enough to say that mushers are almost a dying breed if we don't wake up our younger generation to the beauty of this life.
There you go. We are proud to say, you know, we have handlers also. They live with us right in the house. And they have private quarters and a, you know, private bath. They come to learn to mush, and we're shocked at the quality, though, too, of, you know, these college graduates that want to learn. And every year now, you know, we've had a young person learn, and two of them are up at Denali National Park this summer in their sled dog program because of their experience here, down here in Maryland. And one is a you know, a ranger.
Both of them are rangers.
Wow.
Oh, they're both rangers. I'm sorry. They're both rangers. Yeah.
Before I go any further, I think maybe now's a good time for my friend Robert to call on that station break.
Yes, you are listening to the Husky Life. Yes, you're listening to the Husky Life here on Dog Park Radio, hosted by Stephen LaViolette. He is up in northeastern Canada, way up there in the woods for folks that are listening down in the States, like Linda and Mike, who are in Maryland. And, of course, I'm up here in Alaska. Make sure you follow us over on DogWorks Radio, dogworksradio.com, for all of our podcast episodes, and on Facebook and Twitter as well. What else is on tap here, Steve? What are we talking about for the remainder of the show?
Well, we're talking to Linda and Mike Hertering from Husky Power Dog Sledding Tours. And I got to meet Linda last year. She's a fascinating woman. I hope I get the chance to meet her husband, Mike, someday, and even hope to get the chance to share a trail with them because, you know, you guys sound like this. You're making this out to be almost a dream. The fact that you're looking for a musher to come and take over at some point, you know, I don't understand why, with everything you've got going on there, you're not getting some bites on this, because the only thing I can imagine why it's not is because people just don't know. They don't know the beauty that we have attached to our lives. They don't know they're so busy with I'll call it everyday ordinary life, that they don't have a clue how peaceful yet rewarding the life that we have can be, you know. But I do want to talk dogs a little bit. Now, you mentioned you were going, or you went for some sled dog lineage, and then you made a comment that a lot of people, I don't think they even know, is that there's a very big difference between dog sledding with sled dogs and dog sledding with your sled dog pets, isn't there?
Would you like me to answer that? I'll answer that. Yes. you know, it could be a lot of fun. My opinion is it could be a lot of fun with your pet, and you teach him, and you spend him or her, you spend tons of time. But we found over the years that if they have the lineage, boom, they are very much more focused on the trail. And a little less playing, I guess that's about it, right? Well, Mike.
I'm sure Steve and Robert, you'll both agree with this. When we get ready to do a tour, when we're finished with the education and we get ready to harness and hook, the harnesses are hanging over in front of the garage, and the dogs know immediately when I walk over and grab the harnesses that they're going, and the guests who have never seen this all of a sudden see a dog yard go crazy. That's the difference between your pet and dog sledding lineage. These guys and gals just can't wait to get harnessed and hooked and go.
Steve keeps his dogs very calm before he goes, and we have not talked to them.
the difference is they're like that for me, you know. I don't think they'd be like that with everybody. I glamorize it a little bit. I do train my dogs to be extremely patient. I love that my dogs can be patient, but don't get them wrong. When they see me walk out with a harness,
yeah,
and when they see sleds coming out or the bikes coming out, you know, until I say okay, it's pandemonium out here. Like, do like that. I've trained them to. I can hook on the line. I can take my time to hook them on the line. They sit there, they lay there, and they wait. But the minute that hook comes out of the snow, baby. Oh, my Lord, it's just rip it, just rip, just go.
Yes.
We always tell
our guests, you know, please, no screaming. And they look at you like, why would I scream? And they go, you're going to say, oh, my, we're going so fast.
Exactly.
You know, so, and the dogs think you're trying to tell them something.
That's right.
Yeah.
I love that. I think it's fantastic. But I do agree, there is such a big difference. And I'm not downing any. I'll call them sled dog pets for the sake of our show. But I'm not downing any of them. But I think people do need to understand, and I don't think they do. Many do, but some of them don't. That there is a very, very, very big difference, not only in the physicality of the dog, but the mentality of the dog. There's a very big difference in
That's
generations
right.
of dogs that have been born, raised, trained, live, eat, sleep, poop, dog sledding, and your sled dog pet. There's a very, very big difference.
And I do talk about that, especially if people own Huskies. You know, we tailor each tour to more, you know, what they want to, and often they want to know, they have Huskies, they want to know things. And they don't understand that dogs are often breed for attitude, and and therein lies a big difference. And show dogs, which a lot of people have, are beautiful, but they're usually, you know, they're bred for a different attitude. And
that's right.
Yeah. And speaking of dogs, I'd love to tell you if you like about this litter we had that I think is incredibly statistically unique. They're four different colors. Four different colors of purebred Siberians, AKC Siberians, and four different sets of eyes. So I love showing tour guests this. We have a red Siberian, deep red, with amber eyes. We have a gray Siberian with a party eye. And we have a black and white, typical-looking Siberian. They're all, you know, these siblings with a bi eye, one of each color. And last is a blonde. Now, I can't even say that I knew you could have a blonde Siberian, but we do. and she's a blue-eyed, our blue-eyed blonde. So, So I've named them the metal litter. She's Goldie and Copper and Steel. Lee's the black one, and Silver is a gray boy.
I've always told people when they come in my yard, they see all these different colored Siberians, and they're like, wait a minute, are they all real Siberians? Like, of course.
Yeah, right.
But they're not black and white. They're not gray and white.
Right,
you know,
right. But this is one litter. I was surprised, you know, and one litter would produce such a, But they're not puppies anymore.
My answer is simply the same. You know, Siberian Huskies are like roses. They come in all different colors. You know, you don't just have the red ones. So, now, you mentioned you guys traveled a lot. You guys got to know all this life. But when you get to, let's say, retire from this life, how are you going to manage that?
Manage what? I'm so,
well,
not sure what your question is.
Well, you guys are in this life full blown, 100%, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. How are you going to retire from that? What are you going to do with yourselves?
Well, it depends. We're very open. If someone were to take over this business, would they take the dogs? We could still have dogs, and we'd still go mushing without the talking to tour guests. And without taking tour guests, and without doing all the business, the time it takes to run a business. You know, I have emails. I'm on, you know, hours a day and sending forms and just to run and maintaining. Well, we'd still maintain the trails for ourselves, so we could bush for ourselves is one option. If someone were to take over the business with our dogs, they'd have to be a pretty special person to have our dogs.
Yeah,
you have to remember we traveled. For years, a lot of years, and we're sort of, I've never, you know, for 30 years, I never lived in the same place more than 3 years once, and we sort of like that, you know, and so I've been here 10 years, and I had a little itch again. Mike and I met, we both lived on boats in Washington, D.C., and on the Washington Channel downtown, and I had a boat where single people, and so we thought we'd sail around the world together. I laughed because here we are without a boat and, you know, all these dogs. But we did. We bought a sailboat, and we lived on that during our active duty years, and Mike's active duty. And people thought we were a little odd then, you know, because you show up in uniform and you live on a boat. And so it's sort of like being on vacation, and we did a lot all the time. And so is this life. Because we chose to, you know, do what we loved. And at that time, we loved sailing, and we sailed a lot, enough
now,
that we don't need to sail around the world anymore. So I'm not sure what we'll do next.
I'm sure you get this question all the time, and this maybe I'm backtracking a little bit. I get this question all the time, and I'm sure you get it too, but I want you to let me know and talk to me like I'm one of your clients. Do your dogs ever get to go in the house?
They do. Well, actually, you know, the first thing they say, oh, those poor dogs, they're on chains, they never get any exercise.
Thank you.
And yes, that happens a lot, and I always make it a point to talk about it, whether they ask about it or not, both of those things. And I show, you know, I tell how the tethers, why would you tether your dogs? I ask them to answer if you had a bunch of dogs. And there's a lot of reasons. They, you know, sometimes they think of it, sometimes they don't. You know, they could fight, they could easily chew through our little fence, they could have unplanned litters of puppies. So we talk about the tethering, and I point out, and hopefully someone will be demonstrating how they can run in circles and get all the exercise they want and build up their little NASCAR tracks, which folks don't see because we have a gravel yard on purpose, very hygienic, and we rake it flat. You know, it looks beautiful every day. So they don't see these tracks they build. They have to, like, sort of picture it. And so, number one, they get all that. When they feel like it, they get a house dog can't get full speed, right? So I tell them that, and they're like, oh, yeah. And, of course, they go out on the trails, but when they're – they have the option to run at full speed, let's say, when they're tethered. And I explain that I believe in some studies have shown they feel safer that, you know, and some, that no other dog can get in their space and they have their den. So about the house business, we do bring dogs in the house. I tell them that. And they look, usually, and they say, not all at once. And they, oh, yeah, okay. So, you know, we'll bring two or three or four or five, have slumber parties sometimes. And not all the time. And so we do have dogs that come in the house because we're small on purpose. I tell them, you know, this is a small yard, a Iditarod yard, touring yard, could easily have, you know, 50, 100 dogs, 150 even. So, you know, you're looking at a small yard, but everything else is the same. And usually there are, and I built some house dogs in touring yards, but these guys live outside, and I tell them I would never take your husky and go put it outside because it hasn't grown up that way.
Exactly.
And it doesn't know, and it would cry, and they're like, okay, you know. They know when they realize the dogs grew up that way, they understand. Yeah, I talk about that a lot.
Yeah. Now, how long how long do your dogs get to stay inside when they do go inside? Are they willing to stay inside for a long time, or do you keep them inside?
Normally, and I tell folks this too, they get hot in the house. You know, they lean up against the cold glass doors, or I usually, you know, tell a joke about how people are trying to get their dogs off, you know, off the bed. I'm trying to get mine on, but it's too hot for them up there. And in our case, we open the door, they go back out for morning feeding because, but we do have a kennel. If we had an injured dog or, you know, a pregnant dog, we have a lower level and a kennel with sliding glass doors that we could keep. And we have, you know, if we need to keep a dog isolated for any reason or with more attention, we have that capability too, where they're in and out of the house.
I can't keep most of mine inside for more than 20, 30 minutes. They're inside 20, 30 minutes, and then the next thing you know, their faces are up against the patio window just licking the glass waiting to come back out.
Yeah. Well, we do have a couple, Steve, that when they come in, they expect to come up and go to the bedroom and spend the night in. And one of them, you just about literally have to carry her back out to the yard because she loves being inside. But generally, they, like you said, they're in for a little bit, then it's time to go back out where it's cold.
Yeah, it's the same with me. And I think that's another aspect that people don't understand because I get that question asked so many times. And that, again, becomes a difference between the sled dog, the working sled dog, the sled dog pet. That is a very big difference. It also goes in the mentality of the dog. They work, live, and breathe outside. They want everything to do with outside. Being inside almost goes against their religion.
Yes, and I do, and I talk about that. And once I tell them these are working dogs, that that's part of the learning. Why I like them to be here looking at the yard, and they see how they live, and they see that, you know, they're happy. We're a little different, I think, than some yards. We have them close enough to one or two or three other dogs to sort of wrestle and play. And they're such creatures of habit that as soon as people sit down and they know they're not coming in the yard and going to be pet or something by humans, which they do later, then they start interacting among themselves. A lot of times I tell folks, now watch the dog yards and dog teams are just like husbands and little kids. The more you talk, the less they listen. And these guys will soon start ignoring me because they've heard this before, you know, a lot of times, and they usually laugh. But and they do. After, you know, 5 minutes of watching people sit down, they start ignoring them, and they start their own interactions across the yard. Even though they're tethered, you know, you'll see some play, you'll see some, you know, bark at each other, growl or wrestle, and then people start to understand that it's a whole
And the other thing I would add to that, Steve, is all of our dogs are incredibly well socialized. So the last part of every tour is a visit to the dog yard, and we actually take the customers to visit each dog. The dog jumps up on his house, and he gets loved on, and I talk about each individual dog, and then we go through the entire dog yard. So a lot of people find that amazing that they're so friendly and loving, too.
Yeah. And when you come down to it, it's a misconception a lot of people have when they hear the term a working dog in a working kennel. They're all outside, that they're not loved, they're not pampered, and that if you put two dogs together, they're going to fight, and it's a nightmare.
Right.
But it's not. Go ahead.
I'm so sorry. I thought you were done.
No, that's okay.
You know, Carl, I say I don't like to, this is not the same thing as a dog tied to a tree out in the front yard, out in the country, that's wrapped around the tree, that can't reach a water bowl, no shelter. This is not that.
It's not
tethering,
that.
And then there's humanely tethering.
And I actually explain how many hours of the day that Linda and I are out in the dog yard interacting with the dogs, so that, you know, I explain to them that these guys get more personal attention than any pet ever does.
I'm ready to put my cards on the table with that one as well. You know, there's a reason I'm a full-time musher. And when I say full-time, I mean full-time. I don't have a 9-to-5 job. I don't have an 8-to-4 job or 12-to-8 midnight job. Not that I have anything against. But for me, my philosophy is simple. They give me enough that the least I can do is give them me. So
I am
with them pretty much 24/7. So I use every excuse I can to be in the kennel. I do my work in the kennel. I build dog houses in the kennel. I train dogs for the SPCA at times that are problematic. I take other people's dogs and they come and join me in the kennel and work with my dogs in the kennel. Everything revolves around the dogs in our kennel. And a lot of dog sledding companies are just the same as you and I when it comes to caring for our dogs. It's a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week life.
We all love it, right? We love it. We do it because we love it, and we love what we do.
And I do tell them that, vice the dogs coming in the house, we occasionally sleep out in the dog yard with them at night.
You know, my daughter just spent 3 nights in a row sleeping in the kennel in nothing but a blanket. No tent, no anything, just in the middle of her team. You know, sometimes you hear her get up at 2 o'clock in the morning because she hears a whimper outside in the kennel, and she's right out there to check out what's going on.
Absolutely.
It's a beautiful life. It's a great
life. Absolutely. And you do know every sound. You know, I've had people ask, how can you tell them apart? Are you kidding? I don't say you're kidding. I say it does. It can become a little difficult when you're on the sled because all their rear ends look alike. But that's about it.
Do they all have names?
Actually, Steve, I'll tell you this real quick one. Just one of our last tours this season, we were running down the trail, and I had our vet on the rig with me. And I always start by giving the names of the dogs, starting from the leaders. And when I got back to Copper, I made a mistake and said, and that's Goldie. And Copper immediately turned around and looked at me like, hey. And the vet looked at me and she said, oh, my gosh, not only do they know their names, they know everybody else's name.
Yeah, they know when you make a mistake. For sure.
This has been a real joy. Thank you for inviting us on your show. It's a great show,
pleasure.
And we love the opportunity.
Yeah, the pleasure is mine. I hope I get to run into you guys in person again, because I had a ball with you the first time and last time we met, and I look forward to the day I get to meet Mike as well. And I think what you guys are doing are fantastic. I wish you would have been doing this longer than what you have, because you guys are it. I mean, everything you offer educationally to the dogs, to everything, it was
true.
I think it's just we need more people like that to help with what's coming up in our next generation. You know,
it's so wonderful to be acknowledged. You know, you can have 6,000 Girl Scout troops in 1 year, and to hear that from another musher such as yourself, it's very meaningful.
I need to thank you for myself being a musher. I need to thank you for being what you do. There's a lot of bad press that go to mushers, not only dog sledding companies, but racers such like Robert and Lance Mackey and Jeff King. There's so much flack that goes to everybody that people tend to forget the beauty that we do for our animals and our animals do for us. And
right.
I think you're one of the people that get to offer that, and people get a glimpse into this life. And it is a thank you from me, because if it wasn't for you, people might get the misconception of me as well. So, and vice versa. So I just hope that, our upcoming generations get the message and the motivation to maybe get involved in this, because it is being lost. But in any case,
yes, you're right.
Thank you for being on the show. I want to thank you very much. You guys are fantastic. I hope I get to meet you in person again. I'm going to look forward to it. And anybody that wants to get in touch with you, you are, of course, on Facebook, Linda Herdering, but you do have a fantastic website, huskypoweddogsledding.com. You have a bunch of options on that website that people can explore. They can get in touch with you that way. Do you have an email address they can email?
I do, which is also on the website, and it's pretty easy. It's linda@huskypoweddogsledding.com. And we also have, easier to find, is a business Facebook page. You know all about that, which is not my name, which is the name of the business. It's Husky Power Dog Sledding at Mountain Maryland Kennels on Facebook. And essentially, I post the same thing on both. But I also have a YouTube website that has all these great professionally done. AARP actually sent videographers out here to do a little segment on retirement living because we're so old. And they're very well done. They're all on YouTube. You know, search for Husky Power Dog Sledding at Mountain Maryland Kennels.
Beautiful.
To see those. Yeah.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Mike, Linda, thank you very much.
Have a great season, Steve. Same to you, Robert.
I can't wait to meet you. See you again.
Thank you, guys.
Thank
you,
both.
Guys. And on behalf of our guest today and Steve LaViolette, we'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.